Policy Committee will come to order. Apologize a little bit to the veterans. We should have more people, but they will be coming because we're kind of in a busy schedule today. So we'll start right out. It's already after 3. And the first people I'm going to call up is the Capital Investment Department of Military Affairs. If they would come up to that end of the table. And then we will start Mr. Palmer and Tim Casalter. You two would come up. 3, 4, I don't care if 5 come up. So then again, Engelbertson, I mean.
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. You just make a note, the important ones, senators, are here anyhow, so we can just go ahead.
Oh, he took that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Senator Engelbertson.
We got to have a little. We got to have a little humor here.
There's 3 of us. We can kind of pass what we want to. I'm kind of outnumbered, though.
Here comes number 4. Now we're even.
Now we're even.
Was there going to be a fight?
Okay. Welcome to the committee. And, welcome to the committee and state your name for the record.
Yes, sir. I'm Brigadier General Tim Casalter, Assistant Adjutant General for Air for the state of Minnesota. And with me I have Mr. Terry Palmer, our comptroller, and Mr. Don Kerr, who is our reintegration officer. Any initial questions, sir, I'll just start out with a statement I have for our department. Okay. General Shelto sends his regards, and he couldn't be here today. He's out at the annual fall conference for the Adjutant General's Association, so he's in Washington, D.C., doing our work. I want to give you a brief introduction and overview, and before Mr. Palmer gets into our capital budget, I believe we've distributed a copy of our annual report to all of the committee. You should have a copy of that. If you don't, let us know, and we'll get you one. And if you have any questions on that report, we certainly can answer that. I want to make just a quick reminder on the status of the National Guard. We're dual status, unlike the reserve or the active component, where we have our responsibilities both to the federal government and to the state government. So when we take an oath of office to join the military, we take an oath both to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the state of Minnesota. And that's what gives us our special designation, allows us to do those missions for the state. Our federal mission determines our size, composition, and equipment, but obviously working for the governor and the adjutant general, we can use that equipment in support of those missions that the state dictates. Federally, we have a budget of about $354 million, and from the state, we have approximately $20 million in state resources. 2007 was a particularly remarkable year for our history. I'm sure most of you remember the first BCT came back last spring. That was particularly momentous in that they were the longest-serving unit in Iraq, both active guard and reserve. They were part of the surge. They were extended for 4 months. They served essentially, in my barstool analysis, they served longer than your average Vietnam War draftee in service. And they spent more time than anyone else in Iraq. Today, we still have about 1,350 soldiers and airmen deployed throughout the world. Currently, we're in about 33 countries. Of note is the helicopter battalion from St. Paul. They're in Iraq. We have an engineer company from Camp Ripley in Litchfield that's in Iraq. We have members of both the fighter wing in Duluth and the airlift wing in Minneapolis, in Iraq and Afghanistan and a number of other countries. We have an infantry battalion from southern Minnesota, headquartered in Mankato, is currently now in Kosovo. And if you're watching the news, that's a real interesting part of the world. So we ask that you please keep those soldiers and their airmen and their families in particular in your thoughts and prayers. The pace of deployment since September 11th is continuing. We see it continuing well into the future. So that momentum that has developed since September 11, we see continue well into the future and will ultimately impact the support that we provide to those soldiers. And that was an initiative in supporting those soldiers. The reintegration is an initiative by General Shelto, which he envisioned a couple years ago. And simply put, that's a program that takes care of and helps those soldiers and those families adjust to living apart, the return, and help ensure those members remain productive members of our society. The Minnesota legislature has been particularly supportive of that program. It was a pilot program for Minnesota, and as a consequence, the Department of Defense is implementing it nationwide. However, Minnesota still leads the nation with that program and is still pushing for inclusion for all the rest of the states and all the rest of our service members. We deeply appreciate your support, and that's where Don Kerr comes in. He's our initial reintegration director, and he's responsible for interagency coordination and synchronization to ensure that our program keeps moving forward and that we don't have duplication of efforts, and we work real hard to ensure that our safety net is there for all of our returning veterans. Of course, we still have our state mission, and that response is unwavering. The I-35 bridge collapse, we had folks supporting that. Flash floods in southeastern Minnesota, I think most of you are familiar with that. The wildfires in northeastern Minnesota, we've even exercised sheltering a number of folks when we've had the couple of blizzards that we've had thus far in Minnesota. And we're always watching the spring floods. So that federal fight and that state fight will always continue. We'll always have people to support that. We're strongly leading the nation in recruiting. We've got approximately 14,000 National Guard members in Minnesota. And when you look at Minnesota, we're about 21st in population. But just on the Army National Guard side, we're fifth in the nation as far as members that have volunteered. And again, that's just the Guard portion. It doesn't consider the active or the other services. And we have very high-quality members. When we look at the things that we've done in Minnesota with the educational benefits, the people that we have enlisted in the Minnesota Army and Air National Guard are very high-quality. We're busy, we're capable, and we're prepared to support the state mission. And those soldiers, their families, and their employers need and deserve your support, and we ask that you continue that well into the future. Pending any questions that you have, I'll turn it over to Mr. Palmer and talk about our capital budget requirements.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Senator Vickerman, my name is Terry Palmer. I'm the Comptroller for the Department of Military Affairs. Mr. Chairman, committee members, staff, as you look at our capital budget request, you'll see it's fairly simple. What we're asking for is money to take care of what we own. These are the National Guard armories, or as we call them, training community centers, are located around the state. If you look in the supplemental materials we've provided, there's a brief summary of the request listed in priority order. Looks like this. It's a PowerPoint. We have a request for asset preservation of $7 million, $1 million for facility life safety, and $1.5 million for ADA compliance. The governor is recommending our request with the exception of the asset preservation, which he's reduced to $5.5 million for a total recommendation from the governor of $8 million. As you'll note in the pages describing our request, that money will likely be matched 50% with 50% federal money, too. It's we take great pride in stretching the state dollars to the extent we can. Asset preservation, you'll see that addresses the deferred maintenance. It handles the major components of the facility envelope, safety liability projects, which are typically sidewalk or apron replacements so people don't trip and fall, sanitary issues, replacing some of the outdated toilet facilities, and then functionality improvement and aesthetics and comforts. And those will be matched with 50% federal money. Our life safety request is $1 million. That addresses those needs in the facilities to bring them up to code in many cases, and that has to do with fire and smoke alarms, sprinklers, emergency egress lighting, and ventilation systems required for that purpose. And that'll be either 75% or federal, 50% federally matched. More often it's 50%, but in some cases we can get 75% match on some of those dollars. And then finally, the ADA portion addresses the barriers to the facilities that we have in terms of the entryways, lavatory, and other facility room barriers. And those will be matched with 50% federal money. Armories or training community centers are the places that members of the Minnesota National Guard go to do their routine training and administration. And when their members are deployed, it's where their families go to share concerns and to share resources. It's a place where the family support groups can meet. They're also the places where the unit and its members store all their equipment. So if they're called to a state active duty mission, that's where they'll report to collect that equipment so they can go do the mission. Interestingly enough, as General Casalter was speaking about the reintegration programs, there's a pilot program that's now located in some of the facilities where the units have recently returned. They've actually stationed mental health professionals in those buildings for weekend drills so that the soldiers are able to access that professional help if they should need it. Armories are also places where many of the citizens have their first exposure to the military. It's a place where young men and women can go to talk to the recruiters about military careers. And in some cases, it's the most recognizable building in the community, and veterans will go there to ask about services and programs too. The buildings are also used by members of the local community. As General Casalter talked about, in times of natural disaster, most recently in Albert Lea and Owatonna, when the snowstorm shut down the federal or the state highways and freeways, they were able to use those for overnight shelters for people with the Red Cross. Often it's the only hall or at least the largest hall in the community, too, so you'll often see wedding receptions and birthday celebrations in those buildings, too. In some instances, it's also where the local citizens go to get their hunting and fishing licenses or to take their driver's test because we partner with Department of Public Safety and Department of Natural Resources to provide space in those buildings where they need temporary space. It's very important that we provide clean, safe, functional facilities for all these purposes, and that's what this capital budget request is intended to do, is to keep those buildings in clean, safe, functional condition so that all these people can use them as they're required. And finally, as you look in this backlog of maintenance book that we provided, you'll see a listing of each facility in the state that the National Guard has. You'll see that there's a backlog of over $24 million in our facilities currently. It also lists each of the projects that were recently completed with the money appropriated by the legislature, and it also describes the type of unit and the facility that exists in the local community. If you look at this sheet, there's a page in the supplemental material that talks about the way we have been able to execute the appropriations that you've been kind enough to give to us. And you'll see the 2002 appropriations are almost all spent. 2005 and 2006 are fairly well along. We would be a little further along, but what we attempt to do in most cases is to batch projects either at a particular building or in a geographic location so that we can get the best bang for the buck from the contractors that are available to do that work. So we would be further along, but you'll see that we are able and prepared and able to execute those dollars if you choose to give them to us. And also, if you look at the last page of the supplemental materials, you'll see the locations of all the buildings. And you'll also note that we have quite a few old facilities in outstate locations in Minnesota. It's very important that we take care of these buildings. As we've seen more recently from the federal government's perspective, small town Minnesota is not where they want to put money for new facilities. They're looking to regionalize facilities. And we think that's a big part of the recruiting success in the state of Minnesota is our ability to become hometown Minnesota National Guard units. And we want to continue that into the future to the extent we can. And that concludes my testimony, Mr. Chair.
Senator Coyne.
Mr. Chairman, I just kind of wondering what we're going to do. Is this committee going to make recommendations as far as the bonding is concerned to the bonding committee or for possible inclusion into Senator Langseth's bill?
Senator Coyne, you're right. We can only recommend him to go to the investment. I know Senator Langseth is struggling with a major bill. If we feel they're good enough to go, we're going to send him there, and then we'll figure out then if we can include him or whatever he can do.
Well, if when we get a quorum, I guess I'd be ready to make a motion, the appropriate motion. Thank you.
Okay. Any other discussion? Oh, I have a question. How How much assurance do we have that the federal government will come through with their 50 match? Sometimes I don't trust them 100%.
Our experience has been very, very good. I'm not, and Terry Palmer can give you much better historical precedence, although I'm older than he is. But the reality is I've never seen an instance where we've not gotten the federal matching fund. I have seen it where we've not had the state funds and could not execute the federal funds on some of our, and not so much on projects, but some of our operation and maintenance. Terry, any perspective on that?
Recently with discussions with our facilities management officer at Camp Ripley, who is the federal representative, he's indicated that they will be able to match any state money that we will get in that capital appropriation. So we're very sure that we will get at least a 50% match for most of these dollars.
The reason I bring that question up, I have a policy not to promise veterans something we couldn't deliver, so I want to be sure that we're at least pretty much assured of 50% match if we get the state match.
Yes, sir.
Senator Coring, we have a. There's any further questions? Senator Coring, we have a quorum. If you want to renew your motion,
Mr. Chairman, I would renew my motion that we that this committee recommend the capital bonding projects that have been presented here today and forward those on to the one and only chairman, Senator Langseth, his committee. I think that was the proper motion, wasn't it, Senator Langseth?
Yes, so.
That was supposed to be funny, everybody.
Senator Langseth, that would be the proper motion to send it to your committee for you to figure out what you can do.
I guess so, but Mr. Chair, I would say of these two proposals for Kandy, Ojai County, and Wilmer, or Montevideo, I don't think we would ever do both of those. I wouldn't think, because they're quite close to each other. I would think it'd be one or the other, and I'm not really sure the bonding committee should be the one that decides which one it is, if we go ahead with it, I think.
Okay.
It may take a little while to come.
We're going to have some discussion between those with Mr. Dyrud and whoever else can have tell us what. I don't want to be in the position of funding one over the other. Maybe that's a chicken way out of it. But.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what did the motion entail? Did it include those two? Or?
No.
Oh, okay.
I understand right, just the capital investments, right? Not the
military affairs.
I thought it was the whole
military
page.
Affairs. Not the homes. We haven't got to that yet. Is that right?
Yep.
Does everybody understand the motion?
Yep.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopt.
Motion to make. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Now I'm going to ask Mr. Dyrud to come up. And
she's Kansas National Guard.
Okay. Senator Clark will
did you say who did
you move
down
here?
I thought you said
he did. He told
you.
I'm sorry.
I've got so many emails on this transportation thing.
Senator Clark.
Okay, but you did get the notice.
Senator File 3152.
Thank you. I'm serious. Mr. Chair and members, this is the kind of bill that we just think is so important. Representative Haas and I think it's so important to be talking and making sure that Minnesotans know as we're going through our bonding processes, the kinds of infrastructure we're talking about. In this case, this bill happens to be related to the St. Cloud National Guard Training and Community Center. It is a well-loved, well-used, well-trained, among other things, and just like other places around the state, it also needs a bit of repair. This relates to the roof. And we just wanted to make sure that what we're trying to do is replace the roof at the training center. And that's the thumbshell about what the bill is. Now, I thought we had somebody else here who wanted to be talking about this bill, but I'm not entirely sure if that's the case. But part of, like I said, why, Mr. Chair, I am here is that it is so important that Minnesotans understand that we have to make sure we're taking care of the buildings that we are utilizing that relate to our Guard, that relate to the men and women who are serving our country. So we're hopeful that we can get a little assistance in making sure that we can replace this roof.
Any discussion? Senator Clark, you know, yours will get be in, if we decide we'll include it in with the recommendations that we haven't picked any. We're not going to take any sides on which one should go. They're all going to have to go in the mix.
And Mr. Chair, I think that's a very good point. I mean, that is one of the reasons why we did this bill this way, is, again, we want to heighten. It's not just St. Cloud. It is around the whole state. And Minnesotans do need to know that part of the point of what we do in the bonding bill is making sure we're taking care of these buildings.
Any other discussion? Senator Scogin moves.
Did you need a motion?
Senate File 3152, we recommend it to pass for possible inclusion in recommendation to the Capital Investment Committee.
So moved.
Thank you. And, Mr. Chair, since I'm not often getting to be in front of your committee, I just want to thank the members of the audience who have been serving our country so well. Thank you.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Now we'll move back. Now, Mr. Mr. Dyrud, we'll keep you up there this time.
Mr. Clark.
Welcome to the committee and state your name for the record.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Senator Vickerman. My name is Clark Dyrud. I'm commissioner for Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Last Thursday, my role was to just introduce our new deputy commissioner for health care, Gail Acevedo, and then stand back and let him speak. This week, the deputy commissioner and all the administrators from the veterans homes are in Washington, D.C. for an annual conference of state veterans homes. So I'm very sorry, Chairman, today I'm what you get. So I'm going to have to carry the message. So.
No questions.
Anyway, what I've been asked to do is present the bonding request for the Minnesota Veterans Homes. And I'd like to preface this, of course, November 19th is when the governor moved the governance of the Veterans Homes under the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. The first week in January, the new Deputy Commissioner for Healthcare, Gil Acevedo, came and started his job. And what an outstanding asset he is. He's a 20-year retired Master Chief. And for those of you that are in the service, you know that that is as high as you go. Not very many people get to that level. He started as a medic in the Navy. He's been involved all of his career with medical issues. Since retiring, he spent 7 years in the California Veterans Home, State Veterans Home, ending up as an administrator of a 450-bed facility. He really understands the issues of veterans homes, and I send, of course, his greetings today. To make things more complicated, the end of October, the first week in November, Building 9 on the Minneapolis campus was discovered to be kaput. This building was built in the 1930s, and the brick, the lovely sandstone brick, had been porous. Moisture had been going back and forth over the years. All of the horizontal and vertical beams were rusting through, and the people were moved out of there immediately. Now, I'll set the stage. Having set the stage with that, I want to go back and draw your attention to the handouts, which you have now. And we'll just hurriedly go through. On page 2 is a quick summary of the veterans homes, the 5 state veterans homes. Operating budget is $130.9 million. 53% of that is state appropriation. And 23% of that comes by way of per diems from the federal United States Department of Veterans Affairs, and 24% are resident care. Here are the current number of beds that we have licensed right now. Minneapolis, there's 341, and if you see, 50 of those are domiciliary, 291 are skilled nursing home. There are 200 domiciliary beds in Hastings, There are 89 skilled nursing beds in Silver Bay, 85 in Laverne, and 85 in Fergus. Our total bonding request for this year is $42.061 million. Moving on to page three, the first part of the bonding is asset. Pardon me?
Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, just one question. Per diem, USDVA per diem. Can you explain that to me and how much that is per diem?
Yes, the per diems, there are only two programs for which the VA will pay per diems. One is skilled nursing home. The other is domiciliary care. So those are the only two. Now, I don't have the current amount. They update it every year. Obviously, you get a lot more per diem for the nursing home than you do for domiciliary. And that is the grand summary of it here is listed. Now, there is some talk of making adult daycare per diems more accessible. They have it in title only, but the restrictions are so tight that there's only two places in the country that qualify for it at the current time. They are going to probably over the next year be liberalizing that. But currently there's only two ways to get a per diem, a skilled nursing home or domiciliary care.
Thank you.
Moving back to page three, the asset preservation is one that is an aspect of the veterans' homes that we bring forward every 2 years. And if you see there, this year we are requesting $7 million. And it addresses building repairs, daily maintenance need for Minneapolis, Hastings, Laverne, Silver Bay, and Fergus Falls. If you see in 2006, bonding asset preservation, was $6 million and $4 million in 2005. There is a further breakdown of that, obviously, as you can see. We can break it down much more, but this just summarizes. Then we move on to Building 4. Now this ties into what happened in November. About the time that the governance was changing, this building, it becomes uninhabitable. What happened? There were 47 people in the building at that time, the last part of October. They were moved. They were all domiciliary care, by the way. Building 9 was domiciliary care. They were moved over to Building 17, which is the nursing home. So currently is a building that has 250 beds of skilled nursing home. 200 are skilled nursing home. One floor, 50, is domiciliary. So we cannot add skilled nursing home veterans until that is dealt with. So that is a situation. Looking at that, the governor in the bonding bill requested the replacing of this Building 9. The reason for requesting and is requesting full funding, of which 2/3 would be replaced by the federal government, by the VA. The reason for requesting full funding is that we could begin work on this July 1st. There is a situation out there that is fairly severe. Now, the other thing is the fact that this is a potentially life-threatening with, the unsteady building, there it potentially moves to the top of the VA priority list. The VA Fund Veterans Homes Project, they get down probably, 1/3 of the way every year in the past, that they're getting an influx of money. So the idea is if you have situations that are semi-emergent, there is a possibility of moving to the top of the list. So that, yes.
Senator Corning. Mr. Chairman, thank you. I have a question. And this is to you, Commissioner, or Senator Langseth. When we bond, and let's say hypothetically we bond for $5 million, and then we get reimbursed from the federal government for that money that we've already spent, does that money that comes back to us just go into the general fund? Or is your department able to utilize that, or where does that go?
Chair Vickerman, Senator Coring, it goes to the general fund. So what is being asked for is, because of the situation, we are asking for full funding, of which two-thirds of it would come back to the general fund. I mean, that is the situation.
And so then, Mr. Chairman, a question to Senator Langseth. Does that money, is that money designated to be for debt service then, or is it just in the general fund?
Mr. Chair, Senator, no, it is not designated to anything. And it's done that way, it's extremely bad policy, because
right.
it means that we are paying off bonds of money that had been spent before. There was one project, I believe it was, that we said that it would be designated to the asset preservation of the veterans, which, you know, that's a lot better. But we, you know, we're in quite a pinch on this bonding thing, and mm-hmm. we are now coming up with the state share, and when the federal share comes, we will get it. And maybe that'll take a little longer, I don't know, but obviously we can't do what we have been doing, where the money goes to the general fund, so here we pay off bonds for 20 years
right.
for money that's been spent. That's
right.
I would think the bond companies, if they noticed that, would think that was terrible.
What is that? Well, I'll just leave it there. I was just wondering what the finance department thinks of that. That doesn't make sense to me either, but I'll just leave it there, Mr. Chairman. I'm just curious about that. Thank you.
My suggestion, let's go through this,
yes.
then we'll come back for questions.
Thank you, Chair. on page 4, the request is $1 million to demolish Building 9. Right now, it is more or less cordoned off. I mean, it is unsafe. No one is allowed in the building, and it is out there, a potential liability into the future.
Mr. Dyrou, that building's not fit to put anybody in.
Correct. Correct. In fact, they have, you know, the ribbon around. I mean, no one, but can you prevent people, from coming in, going in there, et cetera, et cetera? It remains a liability. It is sitting in an unsafe building with no one in it, no one allowed in it, and it sits on the campus. So $1 million is requested to demolish it. By the way,
Mr. Dyrou, before you get any further, that building is not repairable. Did I hear it right?
Chair Vickerman, if you look, we actually did request what it would cost. The initial repair cost is $13.3 million, okay. but that is just to more or less without any problems. I think we all know that once you get into a major overhaul, that number can spiral up if they find something more. I mean, we have no guarantee the $13.3 million. That's the opening to even look at the project for repairing. And they would have to replace all the brick, of course, but they would have to replace the girders, horizontal and vertical, while keeping the building intact. I mean, it's a pretty major remodeling. So that's what the opening bid is to fix what's there, is $13.3 million.
Mr. Dyrou, it would make more sense to, if we can find the money, to build a new building.
Chair Vickerman, that is what is in the governor's request. If you look on page 5, then so what is being requested is to replace Building 9 with a 100-bed facility. It would be state of the art. It would be the pod design. It would have 100 beds, and that is what is requested. The rationale, as Senator Langseth points out, the rationale is to request the full funding so the project can begin July 1. That is the request. It is in the governor's.
Mr. Dyrou, then these veterans were put into a different facility down there because they can't be in 9 because it isn't safe to be in.
That is correct, Chair.
If we can find the money to build a new one, how quick can you put those people back in? A year to build it, or
Chair, I believe that would be. I don't know for a fact. I better say I don't know because I don't know. But it would be in that neighborhood.
Okay. Senator Robes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, thank you very much for this presentation. As you know, we worked on the governor's task force over the interim, and we talked about a whole new philosophy towards approaching long-term care needs for the veterans. And does this request for the $25.9 million, does that include moving to a 21st century model of long-term care delivery?
Chair Vickerman, Senator Erickson Ropes. This, as I say, this building, when the Long-Term Care Commission was meeting, this building was part of Minneapolis campus. This happened, like I say, the end of October, right around the time the commission was making its final report, this building was being evacuated. So that the commission did not have this piece of information as they were dealing with that. They were assuming the number of beds on the Minneapolis campus. They are requesting, as we move forward, that we look at strategic planning for all the state, for all veterans' homes issues, which will be done. This is more or less an emergent condition which happened right in November. So that has changed everything. So it is to keep the basic number of beds. Now, how you use them can, as you move forward, there's a whole range of discussion there. So,
Senator.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. And again, I guess that's what my hope would be, that even this is a crisis intervention, if you will, that as we look at designing the actual plans, that you really do take into consideration some of the concepts that we talked about this summer. Because the new care facility hasn't been built yet, so as we move forward, even though this might be the price tag that's attached, that you know I hope we do reflect on some of those conversations we had and make sure that we are moving in the right direction, and not simply just reacting really quickly to like put your finger in the dike and then wind up having a 100-bed. Facility that's really in that old model we're trying to move away from.
Chair Vickerman, Senator Erickson Ropes, who just mentioned in, let's see, which bullet, one of the bullets. This is designed with communities of 16 residents with pod design, each having a private bathroom. It is the state of the art. It isn't the old, throw a whole lot of people in a row, type of, it is the state of the art and is, we're looking towards the future in that. That is absolutely correct.
Because this, Mr. Chair, will, we have a great opportunity here with just having completed the Long-Term Care Commission work and moving that into legislation and now having an opportunity to build a brand new building, really to be a model for the rest of the state right here. So I think that's a great opportunity. Building
17. Continue.
Chair Vickerman, the next page six is a request. This is $227,000 to keep our place in the line for a project at Silver Bay, a remodeling project which was presented to you in it was appropriated in 2006. And again, as costs go up to keep the one-third share of the state, we need to increase it to $227,000. And then the project, we keep our place in the line. Hopefully it will be funded this year. And so that is just well, it's cost of living, actually, type of increases. So it's a $227,000 for the Silver Bay project. Then the page seven is the HVAC. Request for the main building 17 on Minneapolis campus. One thing, this was in process. This has been on the books. Building 17 was built in 1980. It's a pretty solid building. I mean, people have the idea, they hear about Building 9 and think that everything falling down. No, Building 6 out there was rebuilt. It's a state-of-the-art with the old facade on the front. That is the Alzheimer's unit. There are 91 beds of skilled nursing care. That is very excellent. Building 17, the building itself is pretty solid. The HVAC, the heating and air conditioning and venting, isn't big enough. It's actually more critical in summer than it is winter because you have skilled nursing level people in bed. And in summer, hydration becomes an issue with heating as it overheats in summer. So both summer and winter, heating and air conditioning is a factor. Upgrading the HVAC, which is an ongoing project through all the different homes, well, not the newest ones, of course, but that is that was a standard. It was in line to get this project done. With that, Building 17 becomes quite a solid building. And there is a possibility of redesigning to get, you know, right now it's 2 to 4 people to a bathroom. You can redesign the internal part at far less expense than building new homes. So Building 17 is still a pretty solid building. I just wanted to dispel this idea that all the buildings in Metropolis are in bad shape. That's not the case. You know, so this was a project in line to be done this year. The one that wasn't in line, of course, is the building, rebuilding of Building 9. You know. So that, and then not included in the governor's bonding was a supportive housing unit for Hastings, a Fergus Falls special care unit. This is very important, you know, a 21-bed Alzheimer's dementia unit. I think, Chair Vickerman, you know that Burn is in the process of building theirs right now as we speak, as you well know. There was a request for Candy Ojai Veterans Home construction. Since then, there's other requests, as you well know. There was a Minneapolis campus security update for to you know, update the Wander Guard system, and then there was a remodeling of Building 17. But all these projects, what rose to sort of a crisis level was Building 9 becoming uninhabitable. So that is what was in the governor's. This is what is in the governor's capital request this year.
Well, members, if you ever get a chance, and some of you probably have been in Laverne, and look at the new Alzheimer's unit. It's top of the state art. It's just perfect.
Yep.
I noticed that some of the rest of them here are looking at Alzheimer's units.
Yes, correct.
I think we ought to fund them all, but we don't have the money. But we can put them in the works and see how it goes from there. As I said earlier, I'd like to fund them all. And I think Senator Langstaff would, but we don't have the money. So somebody smarter than me is going to have to make a decision what we need, what we can live with, and what keeps our veterans safe and where they need to be. So we'll work as hard as we can to do that.
Thank you.
Are there any more questions of Mr. Dyrud? Before you leave, Mr. Dyrud, there's 3 communities that would like to have new death homes. And I believe a couple months ago we hired a new person with expertise in nursing homes. He's not able to be here. Today was going to be last week. We got caught up in another committee, so we couldn't testify. I'm all for building more homes. But I think we should go into that slowly with some direction from the new commissioner. Give him time. He's only been here 2 months. And I can, that's my opinion. Now, the rest of you might disagree with me, but you have to remember, it's easy to build a home. The key in it is how do you fund it and how do you keep it operating? That's where the money really starts to come in. So we have to take a very serious look at all these, and they're all needed. We all know that. But we have to maybe prioritize and see how things are going. If we can find enough money for the Minneapolis home, can we get all those people, all those veterans back in a place rather than, would that do it?
Yes, Chair. Yes.
Okay. Members? I can't make an amendment, but I'm going to ask my vice chair to make a recommendation that we send the Capital Investment Department of Veterans Affairs first one to the Capital Investment and see where we can go from there. Is that, everybody understand the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now we're going to move into Senator Gimsey. You have a bill. If you'd like to be on that end, your bill is Senate File 2745. And that's the Candiota County Veterans Facility bond issue and appropriations. That's, and I believe you have two. Do you want to bring those gentlemen up with you at the same time?
Sure.
Just state your name for the record. And
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Gimsey. Could we have a page? We have a handout on the Veterans Facility there. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, for the opportunity to present to you Senate File 2745. What this is a bonding request for the County of Candiota for a nursing facility, a new nursing facility, and for a veterans home. $100,000 was appropriated in 2005 to do a pre-design on this home, and that pre-design has been completed. And my testifiers here today will touch on that process and what we came up with for a design for that home. Wilmer and Candiota County is uniquely situated to host, if you will, to have a home of this type. We are a regional medical center, one of our biggest industry in Candiota County and in Wilmer is the medical community. We have two medical centers that are very progressive and able to meet the needs of the veterans who would be there. The Rice Memorial Hospital is just completed, I believe it's a $9 million. $51 million expansion, and they're continuing to do additional work on the hospital and expansions. We just opened up a new dental school clinic at the Rice Memorial Hospital that is a huge hit. It will be available to the veterans that will be potentially in this home. So we feel that with all of the medical facilities and certainly the environment that we have there in Wilmer, the lakes area, and would be a very attractive area for this new veterans facility. I'll go ahead and have my testifiers talk a little bit about it. We'll start with Wilmer Councilman Jim Dockin.
Thank you, Senator Gimsey, Senator Vickerman, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Jim Dockin. Wilmer is my home. I come here both as a Wilmer City Councilman now. This is my 10th year on the Wilmer City Council. I'm the vice chair of the community development, so this is certainly a huge community development for our city. I also served 22 years in the military. I started my military career in Wilmer in 1953 as a junior in high school, and in 1955 went on active duty with the United States Air Force and served for 20 years. I retired in 1975 as a senior master sergeant, first sergeant. Interestingly enough, my last assignment was at Finland Air Force Station in northern Minnesota near Silver Bay, where you have a veterans home there. So I want to mix my conversation both as a city councilman and as a veteran. I'm very involved with the disabled American veterans in the state of Minnesota. I currently serve as the adjutant for West Central Chapter 34, which is located in Wilmer. We have about 300 members from about 50 communities around Wilmer, over to Litchfield, to Benson, up to Belgrade, and Painesville, down to 212. And so we have 300 members there, but we also have about 1,000 members in our Wilmer American Legion post. I'm also a member of the American Legion. We have a large VFW post in Wilmer. 19,000 people live and reside in Wilmer. We have about that many that come in and out every day to work. I think that from the standpoint of a volunteer base, which really works strongly in the favor of our medical community at the VA medical centers, but also in our veterans home, we have lots of volunteers directly in Wilmer that would come at no cost providing services to a veterans home. We have the pre-design that was put in place. Engen and Associates have this designed in a pod design, so it's very flexible for the use, whether it is skilled nursing, Alzheimer's, dementia, or psychogeriatric. I think that that Willmar is, in fact, the place that it should come because of the fact that we do have all of these facilities. Senator Gimsey mentioned the new dental training facility. I was there for a briefing, an update. Actually, folks who come in a wheelchair can be transported from their wheelchair into a dental chair. I'm sure we'll have many veterans who are in a veterans home that will need that sort of a service if they require dental services. So from the standpoint, from those standpoints, I believe that Willmar is uniquely set up and awaits the disposition of a veterans home in Willmar. And so I'll stop my testimony at this point and turn it back over to Senator Gimsey.
Senator Gimsey, or Mr. Chairman, I'd like to now introduce Steve Rehnquist, who is the director of the Economic Development Corporation in the city of Willmar there.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Steve Rehnquist, Kandioi County and City of Willmar Economic Development Commission. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you so much for hearing my portion of the testimony today. My military background is 24 years, different Guard and Reserve components, retired Major Field Artillery. I would like to echo, and I'll just, what you see is a complete PowerPoint presentation that would probably take 45 minutes. I'm going to be done in less than five. I would like to echo the need for a facility in the state of Minnesota. We have 425,000 veterans in Minnesota. I'll let different people argue how many of those are either at or could soon be at the point where they could use some type of veterans home type services. But it looks like we're providing somewhere around 600 domiciliary beds right now. We've got 32,400 plus veterans within 50 miles of Willmar. What we're trying to do is make a point that the needs for veterans in Minnesota is an evolving situation. There's many needs that have already been identified in the domiciliary type and the residential type care. We're moving into the Alzheimer's type care as it becomes more and more evident and some of our veterans are aging. We know that the veterans, because of battle issues and other military-related issues, the veterans' home have exact opposite of the ratio of men versus women in the Minnesota veterans' homes versus standard nursing homes. We know that veterans need over twice at the rate of psychiatric services as standard nursing homes. We know that the city of Willmar and Kandioi County, with a recently closed state mental hospital, has in the neighborhood of 500 former state employees trained in the care of psychiatric services. And I would venture to say that some of the state's issues in care for veterans is with quality and trained help and the availability in the location where they find them. We'd like to say in Willmar, Minnesota, we have that availability of that help trained in the care of psychiatric services. Recently, the Department of Veterans Affairs have received a report, interesting report that many of you have had made available to you, or if not, we'll quickly get it to you, on traumatic brain injuries. The person that wrote that report and submitted it to the Department of Veterans Affairs, who resides in Willmar, Minnesota, and as a psychiatrist in Willmar, Minnesota, we feel that we have the capacity, should the Department of Veterans Affairs and should the DHS, depending on the type of capacity needs that they seem evident, not which we, the community of Willmar and Kandioi County, see evident, or any other community sees evident as needs be, let's let the professionals decide what the mix should be, whether it be domiciliary, Alzheimer's, traumatic brain injury, psychiatric care, whatever it should be. I can tell you that in our estimation, the city of Willmar in the state of Minnesota, offers the greatest capacity to handle that percentage of care, no matter what type of care it should be given. Wilmer, on a per capita basis, has the highest percentage of group homes in the whole state of Minnesota. This is a city well suited for psychiatric and care of individuals. Now, I could take you through a lot of the other things in this list. Suffice it to say, Wilmer's ready to go. The pre-design study's been done. I know it was Veterans Homes Board, but their site selection committee has toured the town, and we've got a handful of sites ready to go. We're on the federal list. This is a city ready. You got a $22 million project. We're asking for bonding eventually for $7.9 million. So there's a need for it. We have the staffing capability and the medical capability in the regional center to deliver it, and funding assistance is available. All the rest of the slides just support that. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, is there any questions?
Members, when I look at this folder you passed out, and I see that 28% or just roughly 30% of the servicemen coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan are blast survivors who have TBI. That's a huge number. I think that's a huge number.
That's a huge number. The military right now is doing a cursory examination for traumatic brain injury as people are outsourcing from the military, but it's cursory in nature. And it's not even using the latest technology, such as was suggested in that report to the Department of Veterans Affairs. It's not my place to criticize our military, but it's evident that they're not doing as good a job as could be being done.
Well, members, we take care of the older veterans in the nursing homes, but these can be 20, 25. They're different than... They need a different treatment than you do for somebody in World War II, or I've got a lot of calls from Korean veterans. It's something we have to take care of, because I turned on TV last night and there's more troops over there now than there was a little while ago. They probably will be there for a while. But it's kind of a hard disease to, or a hard injury to understand.
Mr. Chair, if I may, if you look on that one slide, you'll see that that's where it shows the MRIs, X-rays, and typical brain scanning devices. And it uses this SPEC machine, which has not been used in soft tissue brain injuries before. It's a colored slide. That color that looks pink in that slide shows where these are. It's the same brain with it's the third slide from the end, or third page from the end, to help people find it. It shows the same brain with four different techniques. It's the SPEC techniques that truly identifies the soft tissue brain injury, and then allows the psychiatrist a treatment modality once they know the extent and the location of the injuries. And this is something that hasn't been done heretofore.
Senator Engelbretson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to make an observation. Wilmer's not in my district, but I've had some experience dealing with or looking at different expansions. I'd like to have you look at this page. Is this existing site? Is that what we're talking about? The proposed site?
Mr. Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, there's a variety of sites that are available. The site indicated on there, let me get to that page.
I think it says Veterans Home.
Yes. That was... That was one of the sites that was available. It was designed. That was the one that was seemed to be most preferred by the Veterans Homes Board, which, of course, we know we're starting at a different point from that, and was designed to point out its proximity to the YMCA and trail system and other sources that are available.
Just to follow up, Mr. Chair.
60 acres.
Can you tell me how many acres this site is going to be on, and are you leaving room for expansion, for future expansion? Is that
Mr. Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, that was about a 12-acre site. There is site for expansion. It was also going to be located, co-located, with the new the city of Willmar. Rice Memorial Hospital also has its own nursing home, and it was going to be co-located with that facility, which was going to give some advantages in terms of grounds, dietary, housekeeping, and other cost consideration. But yes, there was room for expansion.
Just one more follow-up comment. Where I was going with this is that I've had experience dealing with looking at building facilities, and I just would like to make a comment that Willmar certainly has put together good plans, and I know from my county experience dealing with public health and social services building out away from the main part of town, as well as the law enforcement facility, combined facility. That seems to be good preparation, and when I see this outside of the city, that's just good. Just a note that I'd like to say, that's good and well preparing for expansion, and I think that's a good process.
Thank you, sir.
Any other questions? Senator Gibson.
Once again, Mr. Chair and committee, thank you for allowing us to make our presentation. Again, Willmar and the Candiota County area is uniquely positioned for a home of this type. We have excellent cooperation between the city, the county. Everybody will come together to see that this is a very nice facility and an adequate facility for our veterans. Thank you for the opportunity.
Senator Gimsey, the motion should be we will include this in our recommendation to the Capital Investment Committee. You would like
Mr.
to
Chairman,
make that motion?
Chairman, I would so move. Thank you.
Any discussion? Not all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Thank you, Senator. Senator Kubley.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 2407 is a similar bill that is looking at the possibility of a recommendation to the Bonding Committee for inclusion in the bill, a veteran's home in the city of Montevideo. It does seem to me that there are some advantages of this bill over the one that was presented by Senator Gimsey, but I think, you know, I've got more than enough people here to give you some testimony that would point out some of those variations, Mr. Chair and members, and I think I'll ask them to take over at this point.
Senator Kubley, you, it's your call, wherever you want to.
You just take it over to you again.
Thank you, Senator Kubley. Senator Vickerman, committee members, thank you for hearing our testimony today. Before I start introducing...
I need your name, sir.
Okay. Marvin Garby, Commander, American Legion, Lee Osborne Post 59, Montevideo, Minnesota, also City Council member for 22 years. I'd like to introduce our delegation over on our right and our left. We were here last Thursday, and we were glad we could come down. And we came again. And we got people from Clarkfield, Granite Falls, Milan, Maynard, Montevideo, and Wood Lake. There's World War II veterans, Korean War veterans, Vietnam War veterans. Even someone got their World War II medallions on. Very interesting, this proposal. What we're going to do is present this in three parts. Mayor Curtis from the city of Montevideo and Commissioner Gene Van Binsberg are going to tell you why you should have it in Montevideo, or what the community and the county can bring. I'll tell you why it should be in Montevideo, and our veteran service officer, Dennis Anderson, will tell you why we need this for the veterans. So, Mayor Curtis.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much for hearing our testimony. My name is Mayor Jim Curtis from the city of Montevideo, Minnesota, also a Vietnam veteran. Our community is very interested in sponsoring the construction of a new veterans home with our local veterans community outpatient clinic that was built by the city and the county. In our proximity, over 30,000 veterans, along with our new $44 million hospital and clinic project, we feel we are the ideal location for a new veterans home and one that can be easily accessed by those needing the service. We have secured the land needed for the site, 13.58 acres, and have access to additional 16.62 acres if needed. Our community has committed to paying both the local and the state share of the project. Our community actively supports our veterans, and we have hundreds of citizens ready to help. We have proven our ability to raise funds locally and other major products like the VA clinic, and are committed to this project as well. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee of the Senate. We just also thank you on behalf of the Chippewa County Commissioners for hearing our presentation today. The Chippewa County Board of Commissioners would like to take this opportunity to convey their wholehearted support for the location and construction of a veterans home in the city of Montevideo. The geographic location of the city of Montevideo as compared to other VA facilities would provide a significant benefit to family members of veteran home residents by enabling them to travel shorter distances to be with their loved ones. The city of Montevideo and Chippewa County have established a strong working relationship that has produced several public projects that not only benefit the residents of the community, but also residents of several counties around southwestern Minnesota. And a few examples of that are, first of all, is the Veterans Community-Based Outpatient Clinic that was formed in 2002 and was opened adjacent to the Chippewa County Montevideo Hospital. And the facility enables veterans from many miles around the city of Montevideo to access to medical services provided by the VA. Secondly, that the Chippewa County Montevideo Medical Clinic and Hospital. In December of 2006, construction began of a new medical clinic and hospital. The medical clinic portion of the project opened in January of 2008. Construction is slated to be completed by August of 2009 for a hospital portion of the project. The new facility will provide state-of-the-art care for the service area. And the clinic and hospital are jointly owned by the City of Montevideo and Chippewa County, and the cost of this project is approximately $44 million. Thirdly, Montevideo Training Community Center, known as the TAC. In 1993, the TAC was constructed as part of a combined effort of the City of Montevideo, Chippewa County, and the Montevideo School District. The facility not only provides a necessary space for the local National Guard unit, but is also connected to the high school, providing the school with additional classrooms and gym space. Fourthly, Chippewa County has been an active player in many development opportunities and is involved in many joint powers agreements that provide access to public services for a wide geographic area in southwest Minnesota. We have the land available within approximately a mile of the CBOC and the Chippewa County Montevideo Hospital. In closing, the Chippewa County Board of Commissioners asks that Senate File 2407 be supported by whatever means are available, as this home would be in the correct location, would have all the support it'll need, and above all, it'll give our city, county, and our community a chance to give a little back to those that were willing to lay their lives on the line for us. Thank you for giving us this opportunity to share with you this afternoon. I thank you for the veterans of the Montevideo area to come and show their support. And I think just by them being here shows us all what kind of a community and the support that we have for this project. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Kubey, you have any more?
Senator Rickerman and committee, just a little sidelight. It's my birthday today, and I just enjoyed coming down for this hearing. Honestly, I did. I am a 37-and-a-half-year-old year service member of the Minnesota National Guard. I retired here a few years ago. I worked just down below the hill here at the division headquarters till we moved it out to Rosemont. So I'm familiar with the area and around some of the people around here. Terry Palmer, him and I worked a lot together on trying to get that armory built in Montevideo. Why a veteran's home should be in Montevideo? If you look in the closed map, show the veteran homes and hospitals in Minnesota. The blue circles represent the homes that are within a 50-mile radius that they serve. Currently, we have homes in Minneapolis, and you got a kind of a tan circle on that because you also got the VA hospital there, Hastings, Laverne, Fergus Falls, and Silver Bay. There is a large void in western Minnesota with no veterans home. If built in Montevideo, it will serve veterans in 11 counties. This is not to say that other communities are not in need of a facility, but you move it further to the east, you leave a void yet over our western borders. But as the map illustrates, we have the prime location and service area to other facilities. Montevideo currently has a community outpatient clinic, as Commissioner Van Binsbergen mentioned. It only seemed appropriate that the next veterans home be built in Montevideo. We already have the clinic, which means less travel time for the residents when they need follow-up treatment. This will preclude them from having to go to the St. Cloud or Minneapolis Veterans Home for minor follow-up treatment and care, a savings in cost to both the state and the convenience for veterans. You aren't sending them to some private facility for treatment, but we can save tax dollars for the state there. They don't have to get on the bus early in the morning, spend all day at a hospital for minor follow-up care, and then ride back in the evening. This gets to be a long day for some, and they may not be feeling well already. And by the way, we came down in our VA bus today. It wasn't being used. It's sponsored by the community out there and the surrounding VFW and Legion clubs. We do that about every 6 years, buy a new bus for our veterans to get to medical facilities. The next map will show you our new $44 million hospital and clinic that is currently under construction. They moved into the new clinic in January of this year, and the hospital will be completed in January of 2009. Just note the relationship of the community outpatient clinic to the hospital. If additional tests are required, it's just a stone throw from our hospital. And with that, I wish to thank the committee for hearing our testimony.
Welcome.
Chairman Vickerman. Members of the members, my name is Dennis Anderson. I'm the Chippewa County Veterans Service Office located in Montevideo, Minnesota. And I have the honor every day of getting into my office and veterans coming in and talking to me. And I don't know how many of you have actually sat down at times and talked with some veterans, whether they're coming back from Iraq or the ones that are still out there that served in World War II, Korea, Vietnam. But there is a definite need for long-term care for our veterans. A lot of them coming in, I see that, you know, long-term care is available. We can purchase that nowadays, no doubt. But many of these people, of course, cannot afford that. And what happens here in a lot of cases, when I do talk to a veteran about a veteran's home, of course, we are quite a distance away from anything, and they like to keep somewhat close to their family. But I've got one of the greatest jobs in the world, talking to these people and serving them and seeing what we can do for them. And it gets to a point where it seems as though some days you'd like to do more, but you just can't do more for some reason. But here again, serving our veterans is just so important. Serving those who have served will always be an honorable motto of our veterans' health care and benefit system. It is the Veterans Administration's commitment and pledge that should assure that help will be made readily available to all veterans in their time of need. Myself, being a county veteran service officer in Chippewa County, I'm very aware that this is not always the case. During my 12-plus years as a service officer, I have talked with hundreds of veterans when applying for service-connected disability compensation or health care benefits. In both of these areas, I have witnessed denial of disability compensation because of the family income was a little too high in order for the veteran to receive medical benefits from the VA. It is very difficult for some veterans to understand why they are denied compensation or health care benefits because they did serve their country when called upon and were honorably discharged. When discussing long-term care in Minnesota veterans' homes, there's still another type of problem, but it has nothing to do with income, active duty, or military health records. The ongoing problem is twofold: waiting lists and the travel distance to the nearest veterans home. Even though the waiting lists are inevitable, whether in the private sector or in our state veterans homes, it is an issue that takes on a greater importance when long-term care is not readily available to Minnesota veterans. In most cases, by what I've seen, since the veteran does want to stay in close proximity to his or her family, the veteran does become a resident of a local nursing home. Even when a bed does become available in a state home, the family of the veteran looks at least 100 miles to the closest veteran's home. Then they make the decision to keep the veteran closer to home. One may say problems with waiting lists are subject to change from month to month, and this is true. But let me share you some figures with you to show the real change in veterans' numbers in the next few years. Per the Office of Legislative Audit report that I have received on county veteran service officers, this report dated January 2008 shows that there are 137,000 veterans in the state that are 65 to 84 years of age, and 19,000 veterans that are 85 years of age or older. To take one step further, there are 45,000 World War II veterans, 49,000 Korean War veterans, and 141,000 Vietnam veterans in the state of Minnesota. So what you're looking at here, there's more Vietnam veterans in the state of Minnesota than there are World War II and Korea put together. Of course, we have no idea how many will require long-term care, but the statistic that shows that there are more Vietnam veterans than World War II and Korean War veterans put together is a statistic that cannot be ignored. Because of this, I believe it is logical that our veterans' homes in Minnesota will be stressed to a greater degree in the future. I also think with our initiatives through the Department of Veterans Affairs through reintegration and outreach, that what we've been doing in our inner cities and out in greater Minnesota, we're going to see more veterans that do require long-term care. The rising cost of primary and long-term care, we as citizens of Minnesota have an obligation to provide accessibility that is pleasing not only to the veteran, but to the family as well. With the VA Community Outpatient Clinic that we now have, and hopefully a veteran's home in Montevideo, this can be accomplished. A factor that is somewhat overlooked at times is transportation. The site that is available for the veteran's home is about a mile from the VA clinic. Bus and or car transportation will be made available to the veterans during clinic hours. This commute should take 10 minutes or less. This partnership is extremely advantageous when primary care is required as soon as possible. Even if the veteran does require acute care or primary care at times other than during normal working hours at the VA community-based outpatient clinic, the new medical center that is being constructed in Montevideo will be a tremendous asset to help provide care in these situations. For our veterans who have witnessed the horrors of war and or sacrificed some of the best years of their life so that we can meet here today as free citizens of the greatest country on earth, I ask you to take our request very seriously on their behalf. At the prime of their youth, many of our men and women left the safety of their homes to fight for a cause of freedom in distant lands. Now in the twilight of their years, many who served once again leave their homes, this time fighting the effects of age and illness as they persevere to maintain their own freedom. We must pledge never to forget the sacrifices they have made in the past, to stand with them in the present, and to be here and be here in the future serving those who have served. Our mission to provide our veterans with long-term quality care in an environment and community of trust, dignity, and sharing. Montevideo is the common sense location for the next veterans home to be built in Minnesota. It is the logical choice. In closing, Mr. Chairman, I'd also like to thank all the people here from Montevideo today. I think we have 16 or 18 people have made the trip, and I just want to thank them for their support as well. And that concludes my testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Coby, you have any more?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. To kind of recap a little bit, I think Montevideo is a community that has already established a track record for itself in terms of raising dollars to support community services to veterans, and the fact that they built a new armory and community center there that shares services for the community, and they have the new veterans community-based clinic that is there for the veterans as well. And, you know, in addition to that, I think, you know, there's a larger service area that is uncovered, that's not currently covered by another facility that offers services to veterans. It does seem to me there might be some considerable overlap with no disrespect to those seeking a facility in another community. But it does seem to me that the proximity that the city of Montevideo offers to both the outpatient clinic and to the hospital would save considerable operations dollars over time as well. And, you know, it would seem to me that those things focused together with the fact that the community is willing to raise the state's share of the dollars to get this project off the ground make it the better option that we have before us, Mr. Chair.
Members have any discussion, questions? Senator Kubley, this motion should be, this will move to finance.
That would be fine, Mr. Chair.
For the certain, because Senator Berglund, somebody has to pick up the cost to run it.
Okay.
Go to bonding, because there's no bonding in here, but it has to go there. So that should be your motion, Senator Kubley.
I would move, Mr. Chair, that Senate File 2407 be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Finance.
Does everybody understand the motion? Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? So adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Well, thank all you veterans for coming up here today.
Thank you, Chairman.
One last bill. Senator Scogin. Senator Scogin, this will have to go the same.
Going to finance.
Yep. Okay. Welcome to the committee and your witnesses. And
thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Thank you for coming together today to consider Senate File 2803. 10 years ago, this state helped the city of Fergus Falls put together a veterans home with bonding money that currently serves 85 residents and over 1,200 veterans come through their satellite clinic. We are here today looking for expansion. It has been a very successful veterans home in Fergus Falls. It ranks as one of the best in the state and has also gotten high rankings on a national scale for the service that it provides to its veterans. But those who can tell the story better than I are here with me today. Deanna Mounts, who is a volunteer services coordinator, Gene Fahey, who is a local resident and a veteran himself, and Laura Celine, who is the director of nursing at the Veterans Home in Fergus Falls, are all here. I would like them to tell their story, Mr. Chair, and then we'll move the bill along.
Welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record.
I guess I will start out. My name is Gene Fahey, and I thank you very much for letting me be here. I'm here as a private citizen and as a veteran on behalf of the proposed special care unit to the Veterans Home in Fergus Falls. When it was opened in 1997, I thought it was just another old folks' home for veterans. But in 2005, I was able to volunteer and found out how well the employees take care of the veterans. In 2006, the state legislature appropriated $637,000 for a detailed design study for the expansion of this home. The most important part of this expansion is the addition of 21 beds to care for veterans suffering from dementia who need safe and locked units. The home is not able to care for these veterans now, so some of these are transferred to other facilities and in some cases far from their families. 52% of our people suffer from dementia, but there are various stages that they do not need to be in a locked area yet. But you can understand as the disease progresses, they may. Now also in the facility, and I'm gonna use ours because I live there. I don't have any connection except a volunteer. The VA clinic leases space from the veterans home. And with the expansion, they could serve double the 12,000 that they serve now. And that would be 2,400. I made just a quick study of Fergus Falls, and if we did that, using a $3 per gallon for gasoline and 25 miles a gallon on your car, it would cost them $12 each visit they would have to make to Fargo. Now, I used Fergus Falls because I lived there. We have a better expanded area, and it would be possibly more. And I don't know how many visits they do in a year, but I'm sure it would be at least 24. So it would be a savings for our community. Now, this project is estimated to cost $10 million. The United States VA has promised they would pay 65% of this, and the state would pay 35%, or about $3.5 million. We would not be reimbursed by the United States Veterans Administration until the project was completed. I understand the governor did not include this expansion project in this year's bonding bill. We realize that they are having problems in the Minneapolis home, and they must be taken care of. The proposed solution that I've read about is to build four new individual veterans' homes in Minneapolis. And I really don't feel that would solve all the problems. But we must be taking care of these problems. We also need to provide for many veterans in the greater Minnesota. In every state audit, the Fergus Falls Veterans Home has come in one or two. Please do not penalize them for doing a good job of caring for the veterans. Once again, I would like the help of this committee to persuade the governor to return the Fergus Falls home expansion project in his bonding bill and not to leave things as they are. Thank you for your time, and I realize another thing that there are many needs in this, for money in the state of Minnesota, but these vets were there when we needed them, and I think we should be there when they need us. And I thank you for your time, and thank you for your support of veterans throughout the state of Minnesota.
Your next witness, Mr. Senator.
Hi, I'm Deanna Mounts, and I work with Development and Volunteer Services at the Minnesota Veterans Home. Gene made reference to volunteering at the Minnesota Veterans Home. He's coming close to 1,000 hours. He is there just about every day volunteering, and we have great volunteers in Fergus Falls. We're all serving every veteran every day, and it's a responsibility that we all share. Our staff in our home has always been leaders in providing innovative, quality care for veterans. And we're approaching our 10-year anniversary now in March. Gene made mention of this, and so did Senator Scogin, but Health Dimension did a survey at the governor's request and told us that our home was one of the best in the nation. And we take great pride in that. But we continue to strive, and one of the reasons we do such a great job, and I don't mean to sound like we're bragging, but we really do focus on the residents, the veterans that we serve. That is our primary focus. And we continue to always make improvements. We continue to look to the future, and we continue to set goals. One of those goals is to add this 21-bed special care unit, and as well as to expand the VA clinic area, the community-based outpatient clinic, a satellite clinic out of the Fargo VA, is in our facility. And I'll let Laura talk about that in just a minute, but they currently serve 1,200 area veterans, and if we could expand, they would double that figure. $637,000 was provided in 2006. I'm sure most of you remember that for the design of this project, and we have a beautiful design for this project. Now I'm going to turn it over to Laura.
Hello, I'm Laura Celine. I'm the Director of Nurses at the Fergus Falls Veterans Home, and I'm pleased to be here. Thank you. I'm here for John Skillingstead, the administrator, who, as you heard from, you heard earlier, was in Washington, D.C. I really appreciate the gift that the governor has given to design a special care unit. I think I heard earlier before, I believe it was Senator Erickson said, You know, are you designing a facility that's in the 21st century? And we took that gift and we worked numerous hours and hours and hours to design a unit that would meet the needs of the upcoming veterans. Now, in our current population, we have 59% of our veterans have dementia and dementia-related disorders, and we have a very active, open environment that does not meet their needs. They need a safer environment that's programmed to the needs of dementia. We did model after a facility in our community that's gotten numerous awards and recognitions, the Perm Memorial Home, who's really just really out there in culture change and ability to meet the needs of the upcoming elderly. And we did tailor that after that, taking in consideration our veterans' needs. The CBOC in our facility is wonderful. We love the relationship that we have with all the veterans in our community. They now service about 1,200. They started out, we were the first nurse practitioner CBOC community based outreach clinic in the nation, and we started out with about 500 veterans serving them. That has expanded. We have moved our nursing supervisors and our purchasing people into soiled utility rooms to make room for their expansion so that they could serve even more veterans. They are now serving 1,200 veterans, and sadly, they have to sometimes interview those veterans in the lobby area because there's not enough room. We have no more room to give them. You'll note everybody's been saying the VA will reimburse. Well, the VA is very excited and very much wanting to have us have this expansion project because they want to expand the CBOC. The CBOC is part of the project, and they want to expand and further serve veterans in our area to about 2,400 veterans. So we think that this is a project that's really needed in our area, and we're honored and happy to be able to serve our veterans. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, just a quick story. 10 years ago, that facility opened, and one of the original resident is still there. And the problem on day one was how the food service was going to honor his desire to eat a meal there, and KFC was served at the first meal, just because we only had one to start with. But it's a new story, and they're doing a little 10-year anniversary with him this year as well. That's the story. The Fergus Falls Veterans Home does a wonderful job of serving veterans. They need a little help. They want to make a more secure facility, especially for those who suffer from dementia and Alzheimer's. And with that, Mr. Chair, we would stand for questions.
Senator Scogin, I was part of the Fergus Falls put together. We used the shouldn't say trouble. Some of the mistakes, maybe some things we need to correct in Laverne, we corrected when we went up to Fergus Falls. I visited her several times. I run this committee not politically. The governor has done the best he could for veterans. We might not agree with on other issues, but on veterans, I think he's been forward and right up in front. We've sent robes, myself, the rest of you, we've done the very best we could for veterans. So I just want you to understand that part. Other things we might not agree on, but we do agree on veterans' issues. Senator Scogin.
Mr. Chair, I recommend that Senate File 2803 be recommended to pass and be moved to finance.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Members?
Chair, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We are adjourned.
Going to find the other one?
Yeah, are you?
Going to the Capitol Bonding first one.
Just for a minute.